The dirty little secret is that most people surveyed said they would not be willing to take most of the drugs that we give for people if they knew how little benefit these products actually offer. Whereas, you know, treating the actual cause by cleaning up our diet is not only safer and cheaper, but can be more effective in, you know, preventing, arresting, or reversing our leading cause of death.
That was Dr. Michael Greger, and we're talking about how not to die on episode 23 of the Namely Marley podcast. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Namely Marley podcast. I'm Marley. Thanks so much for joining me today for the 23rd episode of the podcast. You know, this show is dedicated to living a creative, healthy, and passion-filled life. Each week, my goal is to share with you interviews, thoughts, stories, everything about inspired living. This covers things like, you know, diet, plant-based eating, creativity, you name it, everything to help us all learn what it takes to live our life to our best potential. I always feel like those are such easy words to say and not always easy to do. I hope this podcast helps. So today I'm talking with Dr. Michael Greger of the site nutritionfacts.org. I am really excited to be sharing this interview with you because I've been a big fan of Dr. Greger and his site ever since I first learned about him. I don't know, it's like about a year and a half ago when I was getting my plant-based pro certification from Ruby, and there was a segment on nutrition and they recommended Dr. Greger as a resource. And when I first found his site, I was so happy. I was probably a little bit obsessed, to be completely honest, because, well, on his site, he offers these short video clips, or maybe 3 to 5 minutes each. And each one goes over different research that shows the benefits of a plant-based diet as it refers to nutrition. And I come from a background on the administrative side of healthcare. So seeing the research presented so carefully and using peer-reviewed journals, it was really important to me and it really helped me a lot to understand what goes on behind the nutrition of a plant-based diet. So Dr. Greger has written a book called How Not to Die. And I think that's something we're all kind of interested in, at least I am. But let me clarify this because, you know, I realize on a very serious note that that is something that has implications beyond just our physical health. And I think I mentioned to you all on my site that a friend of ours committed suicide last week, and it's been a very devastating loss for us. And we're still reeling from the impacts of that, and I'm sure we will be for quite some time. And I wrote more about it on my site, so go check it out there if you'd like to learn more. But one thing I learned through this process, something I didn't know, is that 90% of suicides are attributed to mental illness. And so I was so glad to see a section in the book, How Not to Die, dedicated to depression. It gives me hope that more attention is being paid to this important topic, something I think that's been neglected for a long time. In fact, I noticed, I was in the library the other day, and I noticed that the Oprah magazine has this month's edition is dedicated to depression, anxiety, and mental health issues. And in there, somebody who wrote the article states that suicide is the top 10 killers in the United States. So that's definitely a time to be spending, putting a lot more attention towards that topic. So I'm really glad to see that was covered in his book, along with things like hypertension, obviously, you know, heart disease, cancer, lots of topics. So the sections are broken down into chapters, and each chapter is dedicated to different condition and the plant-based resources that Dr. Greger has identified that can help. And then in the end, there's a section called Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen, which basically kind of goes into how he eats and the recommendations that he makes. So it's a very great book. I hope you get it and that you love it as much as I have. So let's get straight to it. Here's today's feature interview with Dr. Michael Greger. Hey everyone, I'm happy to have Dr. Michael Greger, who's founder of the site nutritionfacts.org, and he's the author of the book, How Not to Die, amongst other books. So Michael, welcome to the Namely Marley podcast.
So excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. First of all, I've heard your voice over and over again, so to get to talk with you in person is pretty exciting. I was a graduate of the plant-based pro course at On Ruby, and that's where I first learned about your site, nutritionfacts.org, and I think I've been helping your page views ever since.
Oh, good. I appreciate it.
I'm sure you do. Well, the thing is, I'm really looking forward to talking with you more about that, and particularly about your book, How Not to Die, because who doesn't want to talk about that? But I first thought I would ask you if you could maybe take a little step back, and by way of introduction, if you could talk about what caused you to start your site, nutritionfacts.org.
Oh, well, you know, all my work really goes back to my grandma, actually. Mm-hmm. I was just a kid when the doctor sent my grandma home in a wheelchair to die. She was diagnosed basically with end-stage heart disease. She already had so many bypass operations, she just got so scarred up inside. Nothing more they can do, so confined to wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Her doctors told nothing else, you know, a couple weeks to live. Life was over, age 65. And then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, this early lifestyle medicine pioneer. Yep. Became one of his early success stories. She's actually even featured, I didn't learn about this till much later, but she's featured in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Francis Greger. That was my grandma.
That's amazing.
It was this kind of live-in program, placed everyone on a plant-based diet, started on a graded exercise program that wheeled her in, and she walked out within a few weeks, she was walking 10 miles a day, went on to live another 31 years until age 96 to continue to enjoy her 6 grandkids, including me. And so, you know, that's what inspired me. Inspired one of those grandkids to go to med school, give her enough healthy years to see him graduate. And so, it's really all thanks to her that I went to medicine. I went into lifestyle medicine in particular. And, for my kind of passion to spread the word about the power of lifestyle approaches, not only for prevention of disease, but also for treatment and potentially reversal.
Well, I think those are two great points that you just made. First of all, it's an amazing story about your grandmother that, you know, they gave her 2 weeks to live, and then within 2 weeks she's out walking and doing all this stuff. That's pretty amazing. But I also think that you pointed out about your passion for nutrition. I think that's something people should understand that's not very common in medical school.
Yeah, I mean, doctors have a severe nutrition deficiency in education. You know, most doctors just never taught the impact health and nutrition can have in the course of illness. So, you know, we graduate without this powerful tool in our medical toolbox.
Yeah.
There's also institutional barriers, you know, time constraints, lack of reimbursement. In general, you know, doctors simply aren't paid for, you know, counseling people how to take better care of themselves. Drug companies also play a role in influencing medical education and practice. You know, my book, I tell people, you know, ask your doctor when the last time they were taken out to dinner by Big Broccoli. It's probably been a while.
I don't think that happens, yeah.
Yeah, probably not. It certainly didn't happen to me. Would have been a very healthy dinner, I bet.
Yes. Exactly. I think I told you that my background, I used to work at the American Academy of Family Physicians, and I was actually in at one point the famous RUC office or building or meeting. It's basically the RBRBS update committee, and they're the ones that decide how much physicians make, you know, by specialty. And it's interesting, like you say, physicians are not reimbursed for prevention.
Right.
And I'm not saying that doctors only look at that as the motivation for what they do, but at the end of the day, they do have to pay their bills.
Right. Bills and procedures. And look, if you only got 12 minutes per patient, you know, what could you say even if you had the chance?
Yeah, exactly. And I reason I bring that up is because I noticed a nice, beautiful theme in your book as I was reading. First of all, let me just explain to everybody that your book is broken up into chapters that go into how not to die of various diseases, like, how not to die of high blood pressure, or, you know, how not to die of depression, or, you know, all different kinds of breast cancer, cancers in general. And I love that you broke it out that way, because there are some things to treat certain conditions that are really different. But I love that a lot of the sections in your book talk about the best way not to die from this is to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. More than a pound of cure, because it's important to remind our patient population that the for a little over 50% of people that die of cardiovascular disease, number one killer, both men and women, their first symptom is their last, sudden yes. cardiac death.
Yeah.
Meaning, you don't even know you have heart disease. It's not like you have a diagnosis of heart. You don't even know you have it. And then, within an hour of, crushing chest pressure, you're gone forever. Like, one moment you spend time with your family. And so, in that case, an ounce of prevention, like, there is no cure for dead.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all about prevention.
Yes.
No matter how much you, even if the paramedics refuse to stop at your favorite fast food joint on the way to the emergency department, it may be too late at that point.
Yeah.
And so that's why even though there's this really remarkable reversal data, suggesting we can open up arteries without drugs, without surgery, you could die of a heart attack before you were given the opportunity. And so we really need to practice lifelong healthy behaviors.
I completely agree. In fact, I think the problem is that there are some people who look to medicine to kind of help actually sustain their current lifestyle. Like, I have a friend that has high cholesterol, and somebody said to him, I know why you have to be on medication for high cholesterol, because you eat all that junk. And his response was, no, I take medicine so I can eat this junk.
Studies show that people wildly overestimate the power of pills and procedures to keep them healthy. For example,
yes.
patients believe cholesterol-lowering statin drugs are about 20 times more effective than they actually are in preventing heart attacks. So, no wonder most people continue to rely on drugs to save them. But, our leading killers aren't caused by drug deficiencies. The dirty little secret is that most people surveyed said they would not be willing to take most of the drugs that we give for people if they knew how little benefit these products actually offered. Whereas, treating the actual cause by cleaning up our diets is not only safer and cheaper, but can be more effective in, preventing, arresting, or reversing our leading cause of death.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times people are not taking into consideration all the side effects, maybe the stuff that's in the small print.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, 106,000 Americans are killed every year from ADRs, adverse drug reactions, in hospitals. These are not, overdoses. These are not, prescription errors or illicit drugs. And estimates go up to 190,000 other deaths from ambulatory care drugs prescribed by kind of a doctor out in the community. That makes healthcare the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe leading cause of death. that's people, so eating healthy is, great idea for people who don't like paying for drugs, don't like, taking drugs. People don't like risking drug side effects if taking these chronic drugs every day for the rest of their lives.
Oh, yeah. And I just think that's something that, honestly, for the price of changing your taste buds, and in reality, the side effects of switching to a plant-based diet, to me, have been, I feel a lot better.
That's what's going to keep people going, right?
Yeah.
Ornish always talks about, it switches you from eating this way out of, fear of dying to joy of living, right?
Yes.
People just don't understand that, your taste buds change, your palate changes, such that all of a sudden really healthy food tastes really good. So it's not like you're sacrificing. It's actually really good. You're enjoying your food. And you may, in as short as just a few weeks, feel better, sleep better, less constipation, more energy. These kind of things is just like, wow. Sometimes you couldn't even pay people to go back to their original diet. But
yes.
you wouldn't know that unless you gave it a try. So that's why I encourage people to try it like a free sample, just as an experiment.
Yeah.
See what could happen, particularly if you're suffering from, chronic disease risk factors like high blood pressure or high blood sugars or cholesterol. And then you could actually see the difference. You can get tested before and after and have a sense where, look, I can choose a lifetime of drugs which have limited efficacy, or I could treat the cause of why I'm in this situation in the first place by cleaning up my diet.
Yeah, and I thought I would point out that I don't say this just because I'm in the choir. I also, and I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, and you know, I was given medicine, which by the way, was eventually taken off. I think I was given Zelnorm. And now that they don't even offer that anymore because it had such bad side effects.
Killed too many people, right?
Yeah. So thank goodness I didn't take but a couple of those pills. But I soon learned that when I got rid of dairy and when I got rid of, you know, eggs and I started adding more fiber to my diet, I actually felt much better. And I don't need medicine.
Yeah, and look, I mean, all of a sudden you're feeding your good bacteria down there.
Yes.
That are determining the health of your colon. What do they eat? They eat fiber. We don't eat fiber. We're starving our microbial self.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can run into problems.
So fiber may be the new black, huh?
Ha! Fiber. Well, I mean, people don't understand, right? Resistant starch, fiber, this is what our gut bacteria eat. And so people have this idea about probiotics. It's like, we already have good bacteria. We just have to feed them. It doesn't matter how many new bacteria you put down there. If you continue to starve them out,
yes,
then, you know, we need to foster the growth of the good bacteria we have. And we have millions of years of evolution, you know, plowing massive amounts of fiber down there, maybe 100 grams a day. In fact, there's a video coming up soon. That looks at fossilized feces. They can actually go back and see how much fiber content we used to eat. And it's about 100 grams a day, which is like more than five times what the average intake. 96% of people don't even reach the recommended minimum daily intake of fiber. And people think fiber is just, oh, it's about being regular constipation. No, fiber is what feeds our good bacteria, which have all sorts of effects not only on our colon health, but on our immune system, maybe mental health, on our metabolic hormones, all sorts of really tremendous. We're kind of in this symbiosis with these trillions of gut bacteria, but if we starve them out, we lose out, unfortunately.
I think you even mentioned that fiber has an impact on Alzheimer's disease. Is that correct?
Well, you know, if you had to have one, if there was like one dietary quote-unquote nutrient that most associated with all sorts of beneficial, you know, effects on organ systems, fiber would probably be it. But it may not be the fiber itself, but fiber may just be a marker for intake of the healthiest foods on the planet, which are whole plant foods.
Right.
And so all whole plant foods have fiber. And so if you just measure how much fiber intake, that's kind of a proxy for how many plants they're eating, how many whole unprocessed plants they're eating.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have these amazing studies where like this massive drop in stroke risk as one gets more and more, you know, higher, you know, fiber intake and cognitive, all these things. Well, but I mean, it may not be the fiber at all. It just may be an indicator of how healthy your diet is overall. And that's the problem with all this, wow, fiber's great for you, is people think, oh, well, I'll just take a scoop of Metamucil. I'll just take, you know, a fiber supplement if fiber's so good. And well, just because people that eat a lot of fiber have these great health, you know, outcomes doesn't necessarily mean it was the fiber itself. That just may be a marker for a healthy food, which we may not be able to replicate by just taking a supplement.
So I know this may seem like an obvious question, but what do you think are the best ways people could add more fiber into their diet? Just eat more plants?
Eat more plants. The best available balance of evidence suggests the healthiest diet is one that minimizes the intake of meat, eggs, dairy, and processed junk. Maximize the intake of fruits, vegetables, legumes, which are beans, split peas, chickpeas, and lentils, whole grains, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices, basically real food that grows out of the ground. That's what we need to be eating. And, you know, the second half of the book is, you know, I talk about this daily dozen checklist of all the foods I like to, you know, encourage people to include in their daily diet. And as you can see, I mean, it's just packed with high fiber foods, such as, you know, legumes and flax seeds and all sorts of other wonderful stuff.
Well, I really like the WWDGE. We should get a t-shirt. For everybody who doesn't know, that's what would Dr. Greger eat?
I feel, you know, when I'm on the road, though, you know, I just, it's so, yeah,
well, everybody asks you that, I'm sure.
Right, it should be, what does Dr. Greger, when he has control over his food environment at home, okay, then I eat really healthy. But unfortunately, I find myself in the middle of, you know, Arkansas somewhere and living off, you know, Taco Bell bean burritos, which is not exactly the greatest choice, but, you know, until airport food courts yes, have an upgrade, Unfortunately, it's only at home I'm really able to eat so well.
And, I'm glad to hear you say that, though, that it's not easy for you to on the road to eat healthy.
No, it really isn't. I mean, so look. I mean, so I'm privileged to be able to, you know, have a lot of control over my, you know, over the food in the house. But look, if you're in a family where, you know, half the family's eating junk and you open the cupboards and it's just filled with all sorts of enticing junk. Yes. I mean, I've got no junk in the house. If I get hungry enough, I'm going to eat that apple because that's all I got. Like, yes. I mean, you know. So I don't have to have willpower to put down the potato chips because there are no potato chips in the house. Now that's not everybody doesn't have that that privilege, you know. And look, you know. So I mean, so you know. I mean, I realize I'm kind of in a good situation, but you know the but you know we can all strive to be in a place where we are able to make healthy choices for ourselves and our family.
Well, I think that's such a good point, and I think it helps that you clarify a lot about what good choices are in your diet, or in your book. So, for example, someone could say that they're vegan, and that's a great choice for their life. But however, it doesn't necessarily mean that being vegan means you're eating this high fiber, whole foods, plant based diet.
Oh, you could say that again. I mean, it's just, you know, it's less vegetarian than more vegetabilitarian. Right? I'm like, we have to actually eat our vegetables.
Yes.
You know, labels like vegetarian, vegan, you know, they don't tell me what you eat. You know, if I have a patient tells me they're vegan, it's like, okay, but are you eating?
How many Oreos are you
eating? Potato chips and soda pop and, you know, I mean, I speak at these colleges and you have all these vegans looking out for French fries and beer. And it's like, you know, that's why I prefer, you know, the term whole food, plant-based nutrition. That tells me what you do eat, right? Yeah. You're eating a diet centered around the healthiest foods out there. That's really, I think, the critical thing.
Yeah, I agree. So like you talk about the importance of having less processed food in your book. And I love the definition that you gave of process. Could you talk about that for everybody?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, everyone has a kind of a different definition. For me, what was important in encouraging people to cut down on processed food, and so I define processed food as unprocessed food as nothing bad added, nothing good taken away. And so then, with that definition, then by definition, we should, you know, decrease our intake of processed foods. And so, but some foods that look very processed actually would not fit by definition. So, for example, instant oatmeal, for example, assuming, you know, it doesn't have all the sugar and garbage added. So, but just like, you know, it looks super, super processed, but if you think about it, it's got one ingredient, oats. It's just, it cooks so quick because it's chopped really fine. It may not be particularly yummy, just because it's kind of gets kind of mushy when you chop it up like that. But I mean, I consider that an unprocessed food. It is oats, nothing bad added, nothing good taken away. And so, you know, encourage people to dive right in. Whereas something that people might consider to be, you know, really healthy, like almond milk or something, you need to realize that, look, that's a processed food. You start out with an almond, and you remove most of the fiber, you remove most of the minerals, and you're left with almond milk. Now, if you use almond milk to eat more oatmeal or to eat more really healthy foods, if it's a vehicle to increase your intake of healthy foods, then go for it. But kind of on its own, it is a food from which nutrition has been stolen from you. And I'd much rather see people eat, you know, more whole foods.
Oh, that's very good. And I like the oatmeal example you brought up, because I was going to tell you, when you're talking about traveling, that's one of my favorite travel tips, is I bring instant oatmeal packets with me. And because most hotels nowadays have those coffee pots with the hot water, you know, I use it to make hot water, and then I make instant oatmeal that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel bad for the staff that comes in afterwards and has to clean out the poor coffee thing.
No, I just use it to make hot water. I don't actually make the oatmeal.
See, I put the oatmeal straight in the little pot thingy.
Oh, interesting.
And then I just, you know, then I just, because that's my bowl too, right?
Yeah.
I just get out of the bowl. I don't know. But then I feel bad that it's kind of all sticky and gross. but look, every Starbucks in the world, or at least here in the States, has oatmeal.
Yeah.
So that can be kind of a go-to. You know, they have oatmeal and you know, with like nuts and dried fruit or something. Yeah. And you just have them hold the brown sugar or whatever. And it's not particularly great oatmeal, but it's nice to know that practically every corner you go in every city, you know, you can actually get something to eat for breakfast.
Yes.
You know, even if you're stuck somewhere.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of reasons why it's important, I think, to go to a site like nutritionfacts.org, because I think you do a really good job of explaining how some studies are really built in a way to, it ends up kind of confusing people. So, for example, you might hear one week that eggs are great for you, and then the next week you hear eggs are bad for you. And I think as a consumer, that gets to be really confusing.
And confusing on purpose. I mean, that's the, the processed food industry, I mean, they love people. I mean, they want people to be confused. They want people to throw their hands up and just eat whatever's put in front of them. Just because, you know, it's a classic tobacco industry tactic. Sowing confusion, muddying the waters, it helps people just kind of give up. You know, people love hearing bad news about their, good news about their bad habits. It sells a lot of magazines, but sells the public short. The reality is that there's really remarkable consistency in the nutrition science literature that, you know, we should boost our intake of healthy plant foods like fruits and vegetables, limit our intake of animal foods, processed foods. I mean, the public needs, deserves to know about the kind of, there's this overwhelming global consensus regarding the core elements of healthy living. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it is important to go in there and say, okay, well, wait a second. Where did they get this headline from? Let's actually look at the study. Was it even done on people? I mean, you know, I mean, it's just, unfortunately, you know, people aren't reading the primary sources. Sometimes you can't read the primary sources if you don't have any kind of institutional access. So you have to rely on these secondary, tertiary sources that people are actually representing adequately what the science was. That I was never comfortable with that because we're not talking about like music reviews. I mean, we're talking about life and death decisions. I mean, if I'm going to change my family's diet over something, I want to know that's actually based on some, you know, real science. And so I don't want to just take someone's word for it. I want to actually read the original, you know, papers. And so that's how this whole thing started. I wanted to know myself for my family, my own patients. Then I'm like, well, if I'm doing all this original, you know, if I'm doing all this research, I might as well put it out there and share it with everybody. And that's kind of how it all came about.
And we're so glad that you did. So where does the science fall on the question like fat? Because fat is something that it's in vegan diets, it's in raw diets, but you see it at varying degrees. Like some people suggest that you could be getting like 70% of your diet from fat, and others are saying, oh no, you really need really, like Pritikin is very low fat diet. Do you have a recommendation from based on the information?
It's the source of fat, right? So, I mean, it's like when you talk about carbs, right? Carbs are lentils and lollipops. Fats can be some of the worst stuff. Probably the unhealthiest thing you could possibly eat is a fat, trans fats, like hydrogenated shortenings. Or some of the healthiest foods on the planet, like walnuts. Walnuts packed with fat is one of the healthiest foods. Similarly, same thing with protein, same thing. I mean, it depends on what the source is. So saying I eat a high-fat, low-fat diet, that doesn't tell me anything. I mean, you're eating a high-fat diet because you're eating lots of nuts and seeds and avocados, or are you eating a low-fat diet because you're eating a lot of Snackwell's cookies? where are you, you know, what are you eating? And so you can eat a really healthy, high-fat, whole-food, plant-based diet. You can eat a really healthy, low-fat, plant-based, whole-food, plant-based diet. The important thing is that, is that you're eating the healthiest foods as far as I'm concerned.
Ah, that's great. And I just wanted to point out too, you know, back to your book and some of the conditions that you talked about. I love that you talk about the issue of depression, because I think that, you know, you've got a lot of conditions in there that are understandably related to diet. And I think depression and mental illness in general is something that is, I think, in desperate need of being addressed in this country. And I really found a lot of the information that you shared about depression to be really helpful.
Well, I mean, that's something that I've been actively seeking out. I mean, most of the a lot of the other things, I mean, it's just like that's what happens to be published, and so I do videos about it. But I don't wait for those kind of studies to come out. I actively, proactively search for them because, you know, there's so little good information out there, unfortunately. And so, I'm able to really kind of do the, give a picture of the entire body of literature, which is always feels good to do. And it can be, so helpful to people. And so I'm really excited about this whole kind of positive psychology movement, talking about not only, foods and exercise, things you can do to improve mood, decrease stress, anxiety, feelings of depression, but also to make people feel happier. And so there's all these studies now talking about foods and happiness and improved moods, and that's kind of exciting stuff. Not only for compliance, keeping people eating healthy, but just kind of as an end in itself. So I'm always looking for that. I have a bunch of more videos coming out on that. I'm glad you. I feel the same way. I think it's great to be able to. Share that with folks. And so it's not just the sense of, physically, though, but they're actually feeling better. And that's what will keep people on board.
Yeah, we had issues with mental illness in my family. And as a result, I end up talking to people about it a lot. And it seems to me like everybody I talk to, they have some story within their family of some family member that's really struggled with it. And it seems like there have not been a lot of resources. Like my brother had manic depression. He was bipolar and schizophrenic, and he died a long time ago. And yet, at the same time, it feels like a friend recently had trouble with her son, and she was facing the same things that my parents were facing, like where to go for resources. And so I was just really, really excited to see that section in your book.
Yeah, I wish there was more, but hopefully, whatever research is published, I will jump on it.
I love it. That's great. But along that same line, you also have sections on things like breast cancer and like specific things that people can do, and even exercises that included in that.
Yeah, in general, every chapter, has the same kind of echoes of these are the healthiest foods, but there are particular foods that have particular benefits for particular conditions. And I was really happy to bring those out. For example, ground flax seeds have this remarkable antihypertensive effect. And so you can test head to head in double blinded randomized trials against some of the leading blood pressure medications, and the flax seeds beat them out. Hibiscus tea beats them out with only good side effects. So that made it onto my daily dose. I encourage people to eat a tablespoon of ground flax seeds a day. But that's, really exciting. There, it's not just like, oh, fruits and vegetables are all the same. They're all good for you. Something like vitamin C, which is widely distributed throughout the plant kingdom, pretty much whatever whatever fruit and vegetable you eat, you'll get some. You're not going to get scurvy regardless. But there are some, compounds, health promoting compounds, only found in certain families of fruits and vegetables, like the cruciferous vegetable family, the broccoli family. Yep. There are specific compounds in the kind of garlic and onion family. There's compounds found in mushrooms found nowhere else in the plant kingdom because they're not even plants, and they have these micronutrients that appear to be beneficial. And so, but you miss out on those benefits if you don't include them in your regular diet. And so I really tried to highlight some of those particular things, because some people, even if they go on a healthy diet, whole food plant-based diet, their blood pressures aren't come down to where we'd really like to see them, which is like 110 over 70. Okay, well then there's specific foods you can add. Same thing with cholesterol. Most people, the average cholesterol people eating this way, healthy, really does tend to come down on average down to about one total of 150.
Yeah.
Which is right where we want to see people. But if it doesn't, you're just, genetically predisposed for these LDL receptors in your liver to have high cholesterol, well, there are specific foods that you can eat that will kind of help bring it down. But the foundation of for all these conditions is eating this, diet centered around the healthiest foods.
So some of the specific foods include things like turmeric or saffron or things like that.
Some of the herbs and spices.
Yes.
What are the best beans? What are the best berries? What are the best sweeteners? What are the best beverages? How much exercise? All that. I really try to get, not just to be kind of a reference book, but really kind of practical, kind of day-to-day guide.
Yeah, I have loved your site. I mean, I think I pore through it quite a bit, and some of the changes that I've made to my diet as a result of your site. For example, I have a glass of green tea every day.
Right.
I also I started, since you talked about cocoa powder in particular and the phytonutrients involved. I actually make I call it cocoa tea, because I actually put a teaspoon of powdered cocoa in hot water with a little bit of, you know, stevia, and it tastes wonderful.
I've never even thought of that.
Yes, it's really good.
So, but does it dissolve?
It does. It dissolves quite well in hot water, even. You just stir it up. I use about a teaspoon, and there's not a lot of caffeine in cocoa powders.
All right. I'm totally going to try it. Thanks for the
tip. Tell me if you like it. I can't wait. I also will add, sometimes to that same cocoa, I might add a little bit of like pumpkin pie spice, or, you know, if I'm in the mood for something a little spicier, that's really nice. But
that's even healthier, right?
Yes. And another thing I will do with something like a pumpkin pie spice is I'll add a little bit of flaxseed to it and sprinkle that over oatmeal, or eat it with a banana, whatever. By the way, I was really disappointed to learn that bananas are not such a great source of potassium. What do we eat bananas for then?
I know. Yeah, bananas in general, really kind of, they're kind of the iceberg lettuce of the fruit kingdom, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so not that they're not great and better than, you know, 90% of what people eat, but yeah, definitely berries on your oatmeal would be a little healthier.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Oh, darn. It's like bananas are the one thing that, it's like you say, it's iceberg. Everybody wants to eat it.
Well, no, look, iceberg lettuce is healthy. I mean, you know, it's healthy compared, you know, it doesn't have all that garbage, but you might as well, you know, not just have some, you know, you might as well eat the most healthiest food you can get. So look, having romaine is better. Having arugula is even better. Well, same thing with fruit. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Bananas are good, but you can amp it up a bit.
I got you. Just always consider yourself on a scale of, you know, incremental improvement. I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. We can all do things to improve our diet every day.
I could talk to you all day long. I've got a whole list of questions, but I know that you're on a limited schedule. So I just want to ask you, do you have anything next coming up for you that you can share?
Finishing up the book tour and then sequel. I'm going to write a book. Next book will be December 2017.
You've already written about How Not to Die. I'm just trying to imagine what you could be writing about next. How to Live.
You know, the next is on weight loss. It's going to be called How Not to Diet.
I love it. I can't wait to talk to you about that one. Okay. So I have just a couple of fun questions here for you at the end of the interview. What's one food item you can't live without?
Purple sweet potatoes.
I was going to say sweet potatoes, but I didn't think purple. That's good. Okay. Where do you find purple sweet potatoes?
Not easy. what you do is you go to Asian markets. They're called Okinawan sweet potatoes.
Okay. Got you. And how is your best way to eat them? I think I saw you in medical school, you just put them in your pockets baked, huh?
Oh, right. Yeah, just to keep my hands warm. I was in Boston. You got to do something.
Yes.
My favorite now is actually to make kind of baked sweet potato fries, where I just kind of slice them up, spritz them with some malt vinegar, and drag them through some kind of blue cornmeal with rosemary, and just bake them till they're crispy and dip them in hot sauce.
Ah, that sounds good. You got a favorite hot sauce?
Oh, well, unfortunately, they're all too high sodium, so I don't want to mention them. But always on the lookout for a good low-sodium hot sauce if anyone wants to email me some tips.
I am a big hot sauce fan, so I'd like to know that, too. Do you have I'm having to ask you this question, and here you are on your treadmill as we're talking, but do you have a favorite workout?
Yeah, anything I can do while continuing to get work done. So, it's a treadmill desk, 17 miles a day.
That's 17 miles a day. How many steps does that equal to?
That's a lot of steps.
It's a lot of steps. Okay. Okay. So what inspires you?
What inspires me? Helping people, seeing people get better. What else could inspire, you know, I mean, as a physician, there's no better feeling that you're actually helping people live better lives.
That's what you went into medical school for in the first place, I imagine.
Yeah. That's why we all went. Look, if we just wanted to make money, we'd go to Wall Street or something.
Yes.
People become doctors because they want to take care of people. They want to help people. And so to be able to, but it's very frustrating to, you know, practice primary care medicine these days because most of our patients don't get better because they have these chronic diseases. We're great for broken bones and infections and acute conditions, but Someone comes in with diabetes. We can slow down your diabetes. We can try to prevent some of the complications, your high blood pressure. But, you know, making people better, that's why lifestyle medicine is where it is.
And most primary care doctors are spending their time with insurance company red tape, to be honest.
I know.
So you get to bypass all of that. That's brilliant. So how can people find you online?
Nutritionfacts.org. I have all my contact information there. I encourage people to check it out. You can subscribe for free. Everything's for free. And all the proceeds from my books and DVDs and speaking engagements all goes to charity.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I had a wonderful time.
I'm so glad, and we'll do it again when the sequel comes out.
Thanks to Michael Greger for being my guest on today's episode of the Namely Marley podcast. If you'd like more information about today's show, just head over to the show notes page at namelymarley.com/podcast. I hope you're loving the Namely Marley podcast. If so, it would mean the world to me if you'd head over to iTunes and give it a review. Also, you can spread the word about the Namely Marley podcast on Twitter or Instagram or even Facebook. Your shout outs really mean a lot. You inspire me, so I hope today's show is helpful and inspirational to you as well. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.